This is a message for those that work in manufacturing across the UK and Ireland.
Do your engineering maintenance doors keep you awake at night? Are your engineers spending excessive time sourcing and finding the spare parts they need?
Eric's on-site teams take responsibility for your indirect supply chain, including both your MRO procurement and inventory control. And, as the name suggests, we do this while being based on your site. For more information, visit www.erics.co.uk/EM.
This episode of Engineering Matters is supported by The Optimistic Outlook.
The Optimistic Outlook is a great listen for fans of Engineering Matters. It is a podcast for anyone intrigued by innovation across sectors, whether you're in healthcare, infrastructure, energy, or beyond. The show is hosted by Barbara Hampton, CEO of Siemens USA, and offers invaluable insights relevant and impactful for all industries.
I think what you're really going to like is that Barbara Hampton is not just a CEO, she's a thought leader in the corporate world. In the podcast, you often learn from her journey to the top of Siemens USA, getting invaluable lessons on leadership, decision-making, and navigating the complexities of the modern workplace.
Barbara brings a wealth of knowledge, not just about manufacturing, but about its ripple effects across all sectors. Her perspective illuminates how manufacturing innovations are setting the pace for changes in healthcare, infrastructure development, energy sustainability, and more.
Regardless of your industry, The Optimistic Outlook is a source of motivation and forward-thinking ideas. Barbara's expertise in connecting dots between manufacturing and other sectors reveals actionable strategies for innovation and leadership in any field.
We invite you to explore The Optimistic Outlook and join a broad audience that values transformative ideas, including us. Search for The Optimistic Outlook wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome to Engineering Matters. This week, we're doing something a little different. We're bringing you a five-part mini-series the team here has created in partnership with the HS2 Rail Project. HS2 isn't just a railway project. It's an opportunity that has allowed the construction and engineering industry to explore new methods of work, innovations, and push the boundaries of best practice to show the project is being built in the most efficient and safest way. As such, it's not just about what they're building, it's about how they're building it, and sharing their work with others across industries. This series, titled Learning Legacy, explores the HS2 Learning Legacy Programme. Each episode focuses on different approaches that represent an opportunity to raise the standards of engineering, design, innovation, and safety. The series features speakers from across HS2, the supply chain, and wider industry, giving their insight on the blueprints, plans and ideas, collaboration, execution, and results. It looks into how HS2 fits into the bigger learning legacy picture. Starting with its introduction at London 2012, knowledge sharing development as part of Crossrail, and now where HS2 is leading by example to push the construction and engineering industry to new heights. And with that, here is episode one, and you'll hear a familiar voice telling you the story.
HS2 is Britain's new high-speed railway. Once it's complete, HS2's British-built bullet trains will provide zero-carbon journeys between London and the West Midlands. It is the largest construction project in Britain, with around 30,000 jobs supported by the project and over 3,200 UK-based businesses helping to build it. Not only will HS2 provide better journeys and boost economic growth, the construction of the project will leave a legacy of knowledge and innovation for the wider industry to learn from. Hello and welcome to the HS2 Learning Legacy podcast. I'm your host, Rhian Owen. Over the next 5 episodes, we are going to explore how HS2 is sharing knowledge to shape the future through its Learning Legacy programme. It is a major knowledge sharing initiative designed to spread the innovations, best practice, and lessons learned from HS2. We're talking to the people behind some of HS2's most popular learning legacy resources, taking a deeper dive into what the industry can learn from them. In this first episode, we're going to look back at earlier major projects and their approach to knowledge sharing. We'll hear how major projects can indirectly provide a boost to productivity across the construction sector by learning from each other, and we'll explore how HS2 has gone about creating the most comprehensive learning legacy programme of any major UK project. But first, what is a learning legacy?
The learning legacy is a programme which has been designed to gather and share the knowledge, innovation and good practice and lessons learned from across the HS2 family. So it's helping raise the bar in the wider industry.
This is Bridget Badeau-McQuick. She's the Learning Legacy Manager for HS2.
We have a lot of experts that work on HS2, so it's really about how we share what we've done, the innovative approaches that we've taken, that we've learned, things that have gone well, things that may not have gone as well, things that people have learned.
Obviously, the main focus of any big major project is to deliver that project. But the legacy is important as well, because that is what shifts the industry on. It's what we learn from. If big projects like HS2 can't create a shift in ideas, then what is?
This is Clive Roberts. He is Professor of Railway Systems at the University of Birmingham and Director of the UK Rail Research and Innovation Network.
Major projects form a real foundation for our future learning and pushing forward innovation in railways. Lots came out of Crossrail, huge amounts are coming out of HS2 around tunnelling, around how we build robust systems and make sure that they'll operate properly, how we do lots of monitoring, lots and lots of innovation in here that's going to obviously feed into HS2 but feed into railways around the world.
The biggest opportunity I think that HS2 has is simply the scale of it. It is so big.
This is Martin Sherlock. He is the Knowledge Management Lead at National Highways and was attending the HS2 Learning Legacy Live event in London, which is one of the ways that HS2 actively shares knowledge with the industry.
I love today's event because it was full of ideas and people. Everything we do is the people that bring it. It's the stuff in people's heads that makes that difference. So that ability to dream and experiment. Can you think about how we start to build this across the wider sector? So we're very siloed. Those silos cut two ways. So there's a kind of public sector silos, National Highways, Network Rail, HS2, etc. And we do talk to each other, but we still largely sit within those silos. And then if you look at our supply chain, so some of the big suppliers here today, the same suppliers that Highways uses, people like Balfour Beatty, for example. And again, we've got those kind of silos, some that's around commercial confidentiality, but there's an awful lot that we could drive differently if we were willing to kind of take some of those barriers down and come together and create stuff.
HS2 isn't the first major project in the UK that has developed a learning legacy. And a lot of how HS2 has set up its learning legacy is based on the learning legacies that have come before it. An early promoter of learning legacy programmes was the 2012 London Olympics.
On your marks, get set.
Everybody was proud to work on the Olympics. That's what it was. It was successful. They wanted to share what they had done. People wanted to hear what they had done. It was so very public and it was a lot of social good. There was a big emphasis on that in the bid about legacy and social value. So London 2012 invested their time and resource in doing it.
Karen Elson is a chartered engineer with 25 years experience in the construction industry. She was part of the London 2012 Olympic Delivery Authority and helped develop its Learning Legacy programme.
So the Olympic Park was the first programme in a long time to be successful. And so we were inundated with inquiries about sharing lessons and good practice to such an extent that it was starting to overwhelm people. And everybody wanted to talk about the work that they were doing, but the leadership was concerned that it was starting to impact their resources. So the Programme Assurance Office was asked to look at what could we do? Where do we focus our resource? What value could we add to the industry in sharing the learning from the Olympic programme? And so I took on that role, and this is where Learning Legacy came about, because the Olympics was all about designing for legacy. So it was logical that this then became Learning Legacy.
The first step Karen took in creating the London 2012 Learning Legacy was reaching out to industry to find out where they thought the best value was and where a learning legacy should focus its resources.
So the plan was then to capture the learnings and the good practice and the innovation from the Olympic Park construction programme and to share it with industry in a structured way.
Creating the Legacy programme wasn't all smooth sailing. While the industry was keen to learn from the London 2012 delivery, some of the supply chain weren't necessarily so keen to share, and there were understandable concerns around intellectual property.
IP was definitely an issue for the supply chain. The conversations that I was having at London 2012 with the supply chain on why would they share this kind of knowledge when they felt that they were publishing their IP, that conversation happened frequently. And we had to try and convince them of the benefits. There's more benefits to sharing than there is to, you know, holding it to yourself.
However, Karen had a carrot she could use to encourage knowledge sharing.
There was a no marketing policy for London 2012. And so the learning legacy, by sharing technical content, it gave contractors and people the ability to share constructive knowledge without it being considered marketing. And that was the only way they could get it out there. So that actually was quite a good way of selling it to the supply chain.
In the end, between the supply chain, the Olympics Organising Committee and the Olympic Delivery Authority, over 600 resources were published to the Olympic Learning Legacy website.
And then we were very keen to make sure that the people behind the Learning Legacy were also featured. So all of the author details were on the website as well. But we had a speaking ambassador programme. So we asked the industry partners to host events, and then they would invite people to come and speak about their learning legacy. So it was very much a collaboration with industry. And so that became the London 2012 Learning Legacy, and it was really well received by the industry and was seen to be the first of its kind to share knowledge on such a large scale and so openly with the industry and across the world. Actually, there was a huge international interest in it, and it actually formed part of the international engagement for London 2012 Games, so it actually became quite a good sales asset in that respect.
And it wasn't long before another major project that had begun a few years earlier took notice of the London 2012 Learning Legacy.
It was well known in the industry that the Olympics, London 2012, had a Learning Legacy programme. And that's when we discovered, oh, there's this thing called Learning Legacy. Look at what was done.
Simon Bennett is Associate Director for Stakeholder Engagement and Learning Legacy at Crossrail International and the former Head of Learning Legacy at Crossrail Limited. Crossrail was the company set up by the Department for Transport to deliver London's Elizabeth Line. Crossrail called on Karen to help create its own Learning Legacy programme. When she joined, one of the first things Karen did was try to figure out how she could make Crossrail's Learning Legacy even better than London 2012's. As the Crossrail project was already underway when the team started on the Learning Legacy programme, there was some catching up to do. They did not want to miss out on knowledge sharing opportunities from the work that had already begun.
So this was right back in sort of 2011. Crossrail started getting the engineering function to write 2,000, 3,000 word papers, and in combination with the Institution of Civil Engineers, produce them as a hardback book. So they'd done three of those before the Learning Legacy happened. So the first thing we did, or first thing Karen did when she came into the to Crossrail, was realise there was all of this stuff, and if we could publish those, great. So when we launched the Learning Legacy, we already had sort of 60-odd papers which had been written by the engineering function. And it's still the case that the engineering topic area, theme, and particularly the civil engineering topic area within it, are a very, very big chunk, yeah, percentage-wise, of the content on the Crossrail Learning Legacy.
But Karen and Simon also wanted to expand the type of content that was part of the Learning Legacy.
There wasn't a huge difference between the London 2012 and the Crossrail. We followed the same kind of methodology, but we looked at how can we improve the technology. So instead of PDFs like it was in London 2012, for example, we shared HTML pages. So we were very much around capturing lessons learned, good practice, innovation, case studies, videos, good practice templates. One of the key learnings from London 2012 was it's great to have people's insight, but you need the detail behind it. And so we published Crossrail's management system, and those documents have been invaluable in enabling people to adapt the learning into their own project.
But Crossrail was only going to exist as a company up until the new line was complete.
Crossrail ceased to exist in May 2023, at the point at which the Elizabeth line went to its full timetable, and it was literally, I think you'd even measure it in days from once we got the signalling ready for doing that, the team was disbanded.
So Simon worked on ways to ensure that the Learning Legacy could live on beyond the project's completion.
Throughout that process, I was talking to Transport for London to say, we need to have an archived site. We need to have somewhere where, well, I don't want all this to just disappear. So what we did was we turned the site into a static site, so it will no longer be updated. But TfL took it on, and it being static means that it now costs very little to host, and that can be funded within TfL's overall web hosting budget.
Crossrail's Learning Legacy remains available for anyone to read online, with 840 total items uploaded across the project's 7-year span. But there is another organisation that has been working to make sure that all these learning legacies remain available to anyone who wants them, and that's the Major Projects Association.
So the MPA has been running for just over 40 years, and it was set up initially by some academics who were pondering the question, does project management scale up? So the regular approaches to projects, do they scale up for major projects? And if not, how are major projects different? What sort of practices ought to apply when we're running major projects? They concluded that regular project management didn't scale up for major projects. There are factors like multiple organisations, the long time scales, and various other aspects where there are additional practices that need to apply. And so that's how the association was formed.
Andy Murray is the Executive Director of the Major Projects Association, the MPA. There is a wealth of information being generated by projects, large and small. Technical papers, reports, presentations and much more produced by project teams as a means to share information, sometimes just within an organisation, but also with wider industry. Collecting, curating and archiving that knowledge is a formidable challenge, but it is a challenge the Major Projects Association is playing a role in solving. The MPA regularly holds seminars and publishes reports on project management for major projects. It developed its knowledge hub to archive everything it has produced and then found itself archiving other people's work.
In addition to the knowledge that the MPA has produced through these seminars and guides and the studies that we commission, we also hold third-party content where we have permission to. So, for example, from the National Audit Office or reports from the Infrastructure and Projects Authority, our members share us reports from time to time, and we put them into the same repository and curate them in a way that makes them accessible and linked, so that if you look at a particular report on a topic, you can also see other related reports or bits of knowledge. In addition to that, we've also got the various learning legacies, historical ones, either archived on our site or a link to them from our site. So we have what we call APIs, whereas these lessons learned reports or these the learning legacy study reports are produced, they automatically then appear on our website. So we have that with HS2, for example. We've had it previously with Crossrail, and we also have the Thames link and the 2012 Games learning legacies accessible via our site.
The development of the MPA's Knowledge Hub and the willingness for organisations to have their material archived within it is a mark of just how far the industry has come since Karen first set up London 2012's Learning Legacy programme.
The Major Projects Association Knowledge Hub didn't exist then. That came in just before the Crossrail Learning Legacy, and I helped set that up. And that now is a really valuable single portal to enable the collation of all learning legacies via a single hub and ensure that they are maintained in legacy. So there wasn't an awful lot of knowledge sharing before that. And I really do think the culture has shifted to a more open sharing culture.
By the time HS2 came along, there was little doubt they were going to create their own learning legacy. And Karen has been a key part of its development.
The key difference with the HS2 learning legacy is much better technology again, better search function. But they were pre-construction phase when we started the learning legacy. So London 2012 was fully complete and we published the learning legacy after substantial construction. Crossrail was about 60% complete and HS2 was about 20% complete but pre-construction. So that enabled us to capture a much different learning around how they set up the talent and resources system, how they've done enabling works, which was all very retrospective when we were at London 2012 trying to capture the enabling works.
So the beauty about HS2 is that we've started a lot earlier on the project, so we have more opportunity to gather a lot more information from a wider spectrum.
And HS2 is experiencing the benefit of the learning legacy that came before, as supply chains are now far more willing to share their knowledge.
And that was another key feature, is the engagement by the supply chain in the HS2 learning legacy. They were very engaged. And at London 2012 and Crossrail, it was more the client driven. On HS2, very much the supplier driven, and they were really enthused. And I do think it's a lot to do with the Social Value Act that's come in, and it's changed the culture of knowledge sharing. It's not all about protecting my IP, which it used to be. It's now very much wanting to publish good practice and showcase the work that they're doing, and the Learning Legacy provides a platform to do that.
Starting your learning legacy early in a project's life doesn't just give you the chance to gather more data and release more papers. It also gives you more time to think about the goals of your learning legacy and how best to set it up.
When the project finishes, the legacy of a major project isn't just the physical asset or the system that's been produced, but it's also the opportunity to learn in terms of project management practice or design management or engineering or commercial management or any of the different management disciplines. Always have that opportunity to learn. So thinking about the data you produce, how is it going to be used, and importantly, where is it going to go, I think is a critical thing to do. And the time to do that is right at the beginning, not all the way through, but get that thinking in early. But do it from what's needed, what's going to be produced, who's going to use it, and where will it go when the project finishes? I think are key considerations that I advocate all major projects think about.
I guess we built on in terms of understanding that we needed to do a lot more dissemination, this dissemination program. So the Learn Legacy has kind of a three-part process. So we capture content through challenges and competitions. And then we publish it on a dedicated website, and then we have a dissemination program.
HS2 is creating a learning legacy network of authors. This gives those who took time to write papers and contribute to the learning legacy the chance to go out and spread the message of their work. Because learning legacy content has such a lasting value for industry, academia, and other major projects. Authors share their work as part of our dissemination program. HS2 has partnerships with 12 key industry bodies and academic partners.
And we've got 220 at the moment. And we invite them to come to events. So we had our Learn Legacy Live event back in October at the Science Museum, where we showcased 4 papers from authors. So they showcased their papers, they had questions and answers, so they were able to showcase what they had done. So that's basically what we do.
Since its official launch in October 2021, HS2's Learning Legacy is well on track to be the most comprehensive legacy programme so far. Almost 200 resources have already been published, and there are many more in the pipeline. A series of books have been released in partnership with the Institution of Civil Engineers, and a comprehensive events and dissemination programme is underway. There is also a dedicated website that attracts thousands of visitors from all over the world.
So if you look at the website stats, you can see internationally the amount of organisations that are looking at learning legacy. Certainly Canada are doing a huge transit network works over there, and I know that they are looking at the learning legacy. We had Sydney at the Crossrail Learning Legacy launch. The programme director leading the Sydney Metro works, he's been using the learning legacy, and he was contributing to the event. So it's definitely global, and of course, Crossrail International are using that as a way to sell UK companies abroad, which is one of the objectives of the learning legacy, is to showcase UK PLC. And that was right from the start, from London 2012. They saw the importance of showcasing what we were doing.
Across the rest of this mini-series, we will look at the lessons learned from some of the papers that have been published on HS2's Learning Legacy platform, and we'll hear from the authors themselves. They span a wide variety of topics, from a new approach to design for stations to implementing cutting-edge climate innovations. We'll hear how HS2 is making its sites some of the safest to work on, and how this mega project is harnessing data on an unprecedented scale to build out an entire project digital blueprint. Each of these papers represents an opportunity to raise the standards of how we approach elements of major projects in the future. But these are just a handful of the hundreds of resources available as part of HS2's Learning Legacy, with much more to come over the lifetime of this project's construction. The scale of HS2's Learning Legacy, especially when combined with the existing learning legacies from the last decade, is giving the UK construction industry an opportunity to make one of its largest leaps forward.
Because these programmes are long and take quite a considerable amount of time to design, to plan, to then construct and then make work, we engage different people at different points along the programme. So we've learnt a huge amount about the ground engineering from London to Birmingham already.
I think when you're in it, you don't realise that you are working on something that is so much of a step change for industry. You're doing, if you like, your day-to-day job and looking forward a few years and working out what you need to do. But looking back on it, I'm really proud of what we've been able to do at HS2 and all my fantastic colleagues who've helped to get to this point. I think it is a real benefit, for a wider benefit for industry, not just for the rail industry.
I go back to, moonshot projects. You know, the great thing about those projects is their lasting legacy in terms of changing technologies and systems and all kinds of other pieces of thinking that, change the world.
I think you can forget that we're in this HS2 bubble sometimes, where the amount of innovation that's going on, you just start to think it's just normal, and you can sometimes forget that how innovative some of this stuff is. And so I know from reading some of the technical papers for other aspects of the geotechnical world that are in there, like I've learned a lot, and there's some other fantastic things going around. So just sharing that wider is really important, because you can start to think that what you're doing is just is business as usual, but actually it's really great and is going to really be used going forward into future projects.
I've been your host, Rhian Owen. Thanks to our guests, Clive Roberts, Bridget Badoma-Quick, Martin Sherlock, Karen Elson, Simon Bennett, and Andy Murray. And with closing thoughts from Giles Thomas, Alison Walker, Johnny Neville, and Kim Kwasi. You can get more details on all the topics featured in this series by taking a look at the HS2 Learning Legacy website. We have provided links in the episode description. To learn more about HS2, go to hs2.org.uk or follow us on social media at HS2 Limited. That's at HS2 LTD.